Helen Keller once shared, "Alone, we can do so little. Together, we can do so much." Through the scope of chronic illness and injury, that could not ring truer. We are stronger and healthier by the resources and tools found in our communities. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Join us today as we visit and learn all about the incredible work of cancer care. Cancer care is pioneering systems and resources with incredible national reach. They might just be the perfect community you never knew you needed. Meet Sarah.
Hi, my name is Sarah Paul. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm a licensed clinical oncology social worker and the senior director of social work at Cancer Care. So I've been in the field for over 10 years and coming up on my 11th year at Cancer Care. And every year I'm reminded just how deeply meaningful this work is. I support individuals and families navigating the challenges of cancer, including everything from diagnosis, treatment, caregiving, survivorship, and grief. Really, I've been always drawn to the places in life where things feel a little messy or uncertain, the kind of places where people don't always know how to talk about those things. And in many ways, that's what led me here to oncology social work. So it's not just about helping in a crisis, it's about helping people feel seen and less alone in these moments that are often extremely isolating. And outside of work, I consider myself to be a creative person. I'm a singer-songwriter. I love playing music, especially guitar and piano, and finding different ways to express myself. I love nature, whether it's spending time near the ocean or in the mountains. These practices really help me stay grounded in the work that I do. Grew up playing music at summer camps and our grief bereavement camp that we host every year. I lead a songwriting workshop for teens. So it is, it's incredibly fun and rewarding.
Oh, I love that. Well, it's so nice to have you as my guest today. And 11 years at the same organization, you don't see that much anymore. Like, I feel like that is a rare treat that you get to just really stay plugged in and see that growth and change over an organization. So I would love it if you're comfortable sharing a little bit about Cancer Care and what its mission is and kind of how it serves the community like it does.
Absolutely. So Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization. We are a pan-tumor organization, just meaning that we support people affected by every type of cancer versus some organizations that are more disease-specific. And at Cancer Care, I oversee the Department of Social Workers. So we have a number of licensed oncology social workers who provide our free specialized support to anyone affected by cancer. And that includes patients, caregivers, and those who are grieving. And at Cancer Care, we offer a lot of different services like individual counseling, support groups, which are both online and via Zoom, financial assistance programs, educational workshops and different educational programming, and also practical support programs for underserved populations like children and teens affected by cancer, young adults, older adults, our Spanish-speaking community, and the list goes on and on. And all of our programs are really grounded in compassion and empathy, along with evidence-based clinical practice. And in addition to that, I'm also the founder and producer of Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care podcast, which was launched in March of 2020. And I really created it as a way to expand our reach and also bring real human stories to the forefront, especially during a time where so many people felt isolated. Although I will say it was a coincidence that we launched in March and then the pandemic happened. We were recording for many months before then.
That's amazing.
Now in our fifth year with 70 episodes, I've had the privilege of interviewing dozens of people who have been affected by cancer. And one of my favorite aspects of the podcast is that it really gives people the opportunity to create their own healing narrative. It's not just about sharing their story. It's about reclaiming it in a way that can feel empowering and even transformative. And so for those that are living with a terminal illness, it can also become a way to create a lasting legacy, a way to say, I was here. this was my life. This is what mattered to me. And so the podcast, like all of our work at Cancer Care, is about making space, the space for grief, for hope, for meaning making, and also for community.
It's interesting you say that because I was just in a meeting earlier today with Kim Fryer at Wonders and Worries and just talking with her that exact thing. Like, I feel like I'm tricking the system because I'm doing this podcast and I get to meet these incredible people like all over the world. They wouldn't cross my path without this tool and getting to hear their stories or listen to them being vulnerable and helping our community, to hear them be with nonprofits for 11 years and 15 years and 30 years, and how they are supporting communities at large is, I don't know. I mean, it's work. It's hard work, right? Yes. You should definitely get paid for it. But also, it's a gift. Like, it feels like a treasure to get to be a part in a little tiny way of these incredible stories.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. It's that the case of multiple truths, right? Both things are true. It's work, but honestly, so incredibly rewarding, more than I could have ever imagined. The privilege, it's hard to describe. It really is.
I know that you are virtual. Is the work that Cancer Care does primarily provided through a virtual scope? Or are there brick and mortars or in-office support that's given as well?
That's a great question. So we are a blend. Our headquarters are in Manhattan. We're actually in the midst of an office move right now, but still staying in Manhattan in New York City. And then we have two regional offices, one in northern New Jersey, where we have a physical office location. And then we also have a physical office location on Long Island in a town called Deer Park. So for those three locations, people can receive in-person counseling. Our support groups are virtual via Zoom because we often serve people in the entire state of New York or the entire state of New Jersey. So it allows for additional access for those that are living not close to a brick and mortar location. And then our hope line is completely over the phone, which I'll talk a little bit more about. So we have a blend of in-person programs and services and our virtual programs and services as well. So it's a good balance.
Yes. Wonders and Worries launched our helpline, I feel like, maybe 2.5 years ago, but it was kind of a slow start. And you have helped so much with the Hope Line, sharing how it's worked for you and how it's being utilized in your community. I would love for you to share about that resource for our listeners, because I think it's incredible.
Absolutely. And I would say our Hope Line is our most utilized service, even though we have a lot of programs. And so this is a toll-free Hope Line or helpline. Our number is 800-813-HOPE. It's everywhere on the website. So it's often the first connection that people make with us, and we really consider it like the gateway to all of our other programs and services. So when someone calls, they are connected with a licensed oncology social worker who can provide immediate on-the-spot support. They also could be connected to one of our resource navigators or financial assistance specialists. It really depends on what they're calling for. And so let's say someone is looking for financial assistance. You know, we do a needs assessment on the phone with them to really prioritize and to determine what the highest needs are so that we can appropriately refer them to resources or internal financial assistance programs that we might have available. And usually when someone reaches out, it is for an urgent need related or access to medication, access to care. And then once we're able to really understand what their needs are, we talk to them about taking care of themselves emotionally. Because let's be honest, when someone is about to be evicted from their apartment, they're not looking for a therapist. They are looking for at emergency assistance to help them stay in a safe location. And so we really keep that in mind when people are calling the Hope Line, that often the reason why they call is not usually the same reason why they stay with us for time. And so they call, they make that first phone call, and then they get connected to everything else that we offer. And it can also be really meaningful for people that don't know what they need, because, you know, when you're diagnosed with cancer, everything changes in the blink of an eye. And oftentimes, like, you Google, you ask a friend, you ask family members, and there's just so much information you don't know where to turn. So sometimes it's great to just say, I'm having a really hard time and I don't know where to start. This is what I'm facing. And then have someone talk it out with you right then and there. So it's really a great opportunity to get connected and just to get kind of an action plan of, what do I do now that I've been diagnosed? Or, you know, I've been faced with this new barrier to care. What should I do? Where do I turn to? And that's really where our social workers are meeting the clients.
That's amazing. And is that care 24 hours, or is that care at certain specific times?
So we're not a crisis line, so it's not 24 hours. However, we're open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Thursday, and then 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Fridays. So there are limitations to our hours, but honestly, during the workday, our phone rings all day long. We're taking care of calls and supporting people. So it's great.
That much access to immediate providers and support systems are amazing. Like that, that's phenomenal. Do you offer support for people that maybe speak Spanish? Or I know you had said you had written materials and that level of support, but if they were to call the Hope Line, is there someone who could connect with them?
Yes, we have bilingual oncology social workers on staff. Right now, just bilingual English and Spanish. We do want to increase our access for other language users. But once they call the Hope Line, there are prompts to continue in Spanish. So they can speak, whether it be for financial assistance or for counseling or a support group, we have that resource available to them. And if for whatever reason, there's not someone available when they call, we have a special voicemail box that we do callbacks every day for those people that weren't able to have a live person on the phone. We connect with them within 24 to 48 hours.
We emphasize a lot with our families that cancer has no zip code. And so it is universal across cultures, across languages, across every gender on the spectrum. And I think that is something for our listeners who might be listening in a different part of the world to know that you can still utilize the service even if you don't live in New York or New Jersey. Is that correct?
Yes. So while it's not an international service, it is a national service. So anywhere in the 50 states, including Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands and any U.S. territories, have access to our Hope Line and the support that our oncology social workers are able to give. The only limitations around our services really come down to those clinical programs that we have. So individual counseling right now is just for those living in New York and New Jersey. And our live support groups, which are the groups that happen over Zoom, are also for New York and New Jersey. But we, of course, would like to expand those services if possible.
Wonderful. How do you see cancer care being most utilized in your community?
So it depends. I think that once someone hears about cancer care, and typically it's a mix of things. So once people are connected through our Hope Line and we've really understood what their needs are, we're able to connect them to either community resources or our own community programs that we've created to foster additional support and spaces for healing. So for instance, we have practical programs for children and teens affected by cancer. So in the fall, we do a back to school program and we provide backpacks with school supplies to children and teens in the tri-state area that are really suffering from the financial burden of cancer and unable to get access to new materials. We do the same program, a very similar program in the winter for the same population. It's called Winter Warmth, and we provide warm winter packages. It's blankets, socks, gloves, hats, scarves, lotion, tissues, you know, anything, hand warmers, things that you need for the winter.
Which I know nothing about because we don't have winters like that.
Real winters up here, especially this winter. So really finding ways to support the community outside of just the psychosocial and psychoeducational support that we provide. Cancer care is really about supporting the whole person and finding places where maybe we can just help a little bit more. Like even during the holidays, we have a holiday gift card program to help families get gifts. And oftentimes the feedback we get is, you know, if we didn't get this gift card, my children wouldn't have any gifts this year, you know, whether it be for Hanukkah or Christmas or whatnot. You know, it doesn't always seem like much to us, you know, a $40 gift card or a $50 gift card, but that means the whole world to someone who has very little during a time that's very stressful. So I think, you know, when we talk about how cancer care is used in the community, I think it depends on the situation and what the needs are. We're very family oriented. We understand that, like you said, cancer does not discriminate at all. And it really transcends culture, gender, you know, everything, age, and creates new challenges that people could have never imagined. So wherever we can show up to support people, that's what's important to us.
Do you find that you have a lot of people that maybe engage at a specific point in their diagnosis and then either come back at another time, or is it more like a one and done sort of situation? What do you find to be the most common thread for your organization?
Typically, it's a mix. I would say that for those that are local, that might hear about us from a hospital that they are attending in New York City or New Jersey or Connecticut, people are reaching out to us when they're diagnosed in the beginning. But nationally, we see that people are reaching out in the middle of treatment or when a new challenge has come up. So maybe their current treatment's not working, and now they're trying to find a clinical trial, and they're looking for information about how to advocate for themselves or how to get matched in a clinical trial. Or maybe their insurance plan changed, and now their insurance doesn't cover their one treatment that's been effective for them, and they're looking for resources in order to pay for that treatment. We do find that once someone is connected, people come back time and time again. And sometimes it's because, unfortunately, their cancer has returned. Or what we see very frequently is that now a loved one might be touched by cancer, and now they're coming to us as a caregiver. So we really have people coming to us at all different points. And sometimes our clinical records go back 20 years when someone first reached out to us when they were diagnosed with an early stage breast cancer. And then they stayed with us when their mom was diagnosed, their sister was diagnosed, and they know that cancer care provides that consistent support. I don't know if you know, but last year we celebrated our 80th anniversary. And so this year on May 4th, we'll be 81 years in service.
For our listeners that are not aware, like that is unheard of, especially in the markets of today and the limitations that you face with funding. Like, we're funded by the public. And so when we have hard times in the world, it is hard sometimes to get funding. And so that is incredible. That is hats off, cancer care. That's amazing.
Yes, I agree. And so, you know, when you really look at the legacy that we've built, and of course we've evolved. I don't want to say that we haven't changed, but we've evolved. Our services are consistent, and we evolve because we need to. Growing and changing is important to meet the needs of our community as their needs change and evolve. But our care is the consistent thing. The fact that we provide hope and help at every stage of the cancer experience is a consistent thing. And so, yeah, I think it's hard to see people come back. I always used to say to my clients, like when we were ending a service, that I hope I never have to talk to you again in the best way possible, right? And when they do come back, though, we're here with open arms. We know that they're coming back because they know that they can get the support that they need. And because all of our services are free, we're really serving pockets of the population that don't have access to this care elsewhere. And that's so important, especially these days. You know, we really pride ourselves on being able to be there for underserved and vulnerable populations that have more challenges than most. And so I'm proud to be a part of this org that's been around for so long.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that Missy's been talking to you about registered providers and doing whatever we can to get you to be on our registered provider team, because I think that the more exposure and the more reach that we can have in these communities, particularly these vulnerable communities, it's better care for the entire family. It's better for fighting an illness. I just feel like nobody is meant to fight alone, and having these resources is just phenomenal. I know that there are different problems and hardships that arise, and for everyone has their own unique story. Is there a certain approach that you would have for a family that might be at the beginning stages of a diagnosis? Is there communication or planning or some sort of tool that has really worked well for the families that you serve through cancer care?
I would say, especially at the very beginning, the first thing to do is take a breath and to give yourself grace. Because, like, and this is very common saying, but there really is no playbook for cancer. There isn't. There are hundreds, thousands of books and guides